Time for the obligatory bubbly ASMR. Open up the can and bubbling sounds. Here we go. Welcome back to the interweb, guys. Today's case is gruesome, but I have Mr.
Malik
what?
Mays.
Malik Mays right here. He's our beautiful co-host. And today's episode will have a lot of different things in it. It has murder. It has mention of the R word. And it has mentions of racial discrimination. So just to let you guys know, fair warning, I do not advise this be an episode for anybody under the age of 13. And if you will listen to it, just know that trigger warning is here. Alrighty, hope you guys enjoy. Bye! So today's stories are going to be short and gruesome, and I want to start off by basically letting you guys know what my questions were about the case. The questions that I had were, who were the perps? Who were the victims? When did it happen? How did it happen? Where are they now? And yeah, so we have three perps, four main perps in today's story. The people that we're going to be talking about is going to be Clarence Ray Allen, Lee Furrow, Billy Ray Hamilton, and accused murderer Kevin Cooper. Our story does start all the way back in January 16th, 1930. That was when Clarence Ray Allen was born to his parents, whose names I still do not know. What I do know is that the mother was a loving and sweet parent, while the father was a United States war veteran. He had served in the Korean War and came back to become a cop, essentially. But with the way that he treated his children, by verbally, physically, emotionally, and mentally abusing them along with their mother every single day, it kind of leads me to believe, maybe this is a biased opinion, that he was kind of a crooked cop. What do you think, babe?
ACAP.
Oh, damn. I think we're just going to start some riots up in here. It's okay. Apparently, I like anarchy. Here are some examples of how fudged up his dad was. So, if the kids were to, in any way, shape, or form, do something out of line, he would beat them. He beat the mom and put her in a hospital a total of 5 times when they were together. And would beat her every time that she did something wrong. Like, this minuscule of things. Like, if she was to have overcooked the chicken, she would get a beating right in front of the kids. When Clarence was only 5, the dad had gotten him a puppy. And because the puppy peed in the house, the dad beat the puppy right in front of Clarence to death. The puppy died in Clarence's arms. And I mean, this kid was traumatized. Now, you can feel sorry for the kid. That still does not excuse the fact that this Bits was not a good person. Not a good person at all. Fast forward to 1941. Clarence is still living with his parents. They moved to, I believe it was Fort Hood, Texas, which you know about and I know about because of another case and because I used to live in Texas. At the age of 11, he became a cotton picker, as they called them. But yeah, so far. That's kind of what his life has been like. His family was considered to be dog poor, and they were living in a little shack without any plumbing, and they were only paying $75. There were 7 people in that house. 7 people. Anything to say?
I'd like to live there without the 7 people.
Without the 7 people?
Was there an outhouse? Was there a bathroom?
No.
So you had to use either the woods or the outhouse.
Yes. The woods or the outhouse.
I could do that.
You could do that?
Yeah.
Kind of like Shrek?
Yeah.
I like that boulder.
I like that boulder. That is a nice boulder.
He got it. By 1946, he was 16 years old. And he had met his soon-to-be wife, Helen Seaver. She later on would tell the court in 1997 that although he was a very kind, generous, and responsible partner and father when they were younger, he was known to be a car thief. Now, I don't mean car thief as in Grand Theft Auto. I mean as in he would burglarize the cars of his co-workers during working hours at the place where he would pick cotton. I don't know what to call it because the only word that I know for it sounds very fudged. So that's what he would do. And at one point, Helen did see him, but she really didn't say anything. By 1947, a year later, they got married and they had 2 kids. They had Roger and Kenneth. Kenneth being the oldest and Roger being the youngest. Both of these boys will be brought into a life of complete and utter chaos because of their dad. So as the kids got older, the dad ended up getting a couple of different jobs. Clarence ended up getting a couple of different jobs. He, at one point, was doing security for a country club near his residence, and he was also working at an olive dispensary for oil, essentially. So these people, like, the factory would make, you know, olive oil and dispense it around the entire country. But he started stealing crates of olives to sell to vendors at the flea market. And he was also taking his boys to the country club after night so that he wouldn't have to buy food for them and they could eat at the country club overnight. So a lot of really weird shit going on, considering the fact that at this point, near the 50s, close to the 60s, he had a pretty solid life. Like, he had just opened up his own company. It was a security firm. He had about 60 employees with him, and he had his own ranch. He used to do derbies, you know, with the horseback and everything. Like, he was making a pretty decent amount of money, and for some reason or another, he just wasn't happy. So during this entire time, like I told you, he was burglarizing cars. He was stealing from his work, reselling merchandise from his work. And he started robbing all of the Kmart stores that were in Central Texas. And he decided, I want to rob somebody else because this is not enough. I know that I'm making my own money, but I want more money. So that is when he essentially decided to start robbing, like I told you, the Kmart stores. Now, they did get caught in 68 and he was jailed for a year. At that point, Helen had had enough of his shit. They were close to 40 years old. And she was just like, dude, like, I cannot do this anymore. So she divorced him. But he ended up getting custody of both of the kids. Yes. And he was divorced by his wife back in 1963.
Sounds like some male white privilege to me.
Male white privilege to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It actually kind of does. That sounds really fucked. And the worst part is that there was really nothing out there about Helen to indicate that she was an unfit mother. By all accounts, she was a pretty good mom. Kind of took on the role that Clarence's mom had. It was almost like he married his own mother in Helen.
Can you explain how he ended up with custody?
I wish I could, but there is, like I told you, there was nothing out there to indicate that that Helen Seaver had anything going on with her. There was no mental illness. There was no drug abuse. She just ended up not getting custody of them.
So it was just the judge said.
I think maybe it was because Helen did not work. She was a stay-at-home mom, so she would not have the money needed to take care of the children. Because they divorced in 63. They got together in 47. So they were together for just under
15 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, the kids were still teens at this point. And the dad had a ranch. Had his own security firm. And, yeah, this does lead us to the early days of 1974. There was a pool party. He had a couple of friends that owned a market, like a grocery store, essentially. And he decided, well, I'm going to rob you guys. But he thought the easiest way to do it was by getting Byron, their eldest son, and the manager of the France market to come over to his house for a quote-unquote pool party and to get the keys out of his pants. The way that they wanted to do it was they were going to get Roger Allen's girlfriend, Mary Sue Kitts, to distract Byron. I would love to pronounce his name, but it's a really weird name. It starts with a S, and I can't pronounce it. If you want to look at it, you can. And just try to pronounce it for us. It's going to be in Byron's. It's going to be over here in Byron's Find a Grave. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Schletwitz.
Schletwitz?
Yeah.
Byron Schletwitz. He was, like I told you, he was lured over to a pool party where Mary Sue Kitts started flirting with him. He took off his pants because he didn't want to get them wet. And Roger Allen ended up taking the keys out of his pockets. And he went home. He was trying to figure out what the hell had happened to the market keys because he couldn't find them. And later on, I think this was at the beginning of June. Yes, at the beginning of June. They send Mary Sue Kitts to essentially ask Byron out on a date so that they could rob the France market. So they had that plan. Byron and Mary went on a date. Alan and his kids, both Roger and Kenneth, Lee Furrow, and three other guys decided to go ahead and get in a white van and go to France Market. They took the safe because they couldn't get it open. And they knew that everything was in there because they were friends of him, you know. So they took the safe. They later got it open. And the only thing that it had in there was $500 worth of cash and $10,000 worth of money orders. Now, because Mary Sue Kitts felt horrible about helping out the boys, meaning Roger and Kenneth Allen and Clarence Ray Allen as well. She felt horrible about helping them, one, distract Byron and helping them cash out the money orders. She told Byron what had happened. And because she had told Byron about what had happened, Allen got Lee to murder her. He had at first tried to poison her with cyanide, but that did not work. Which I don't know how he got that wrong. I shouldn't be wondering this, but like, I don't know.
Look, I said it last time and I will say it again. If you do not know how much cyanide or how much of a poison will kill someone, don't use it.
Right?
Jesus.
During this time, because Clarence really wanted Mary Sue Kitts to die for her quote-unquote betrayal, he called Lee while he was strangling her and asked her and asked him, is she dead already? And he said, Lee told Clarence, not yet. Like, I'm on it. And he said, and Clarence told Lee, well, you have to do it and do it now. So he strangled her, threw her into a nearby canal, and her body has never been found. And her death day was June 29, 1974. Between 1974 and 1977, the robberies in Central Valley kept going on. And they had their last robbery on March 1977 at Vassalia Kmart.
Visalia.
Thank you. Visalia. It was a Kmart there. They had a burglary, but because an employee there got shot because of the incompetence of his accomplices, the cops were dispatched like almost immediately along with paramedics, and they got caught, which is how Clarence Ray Allen got caught. He was charged with 8 different counts of robberies. And so he was supposed to only be in there for a couple of years, but because Lee also got, you know, incarcerated as well, and they kind of had a feeling that Mary Sue Kitts, you know, had been murdered because they got arrested in 1977 and she was murdered back in 1974, so she was a missing person. Lee decided to turn against Clarence. So Clarence ended up getting charged with first-degree murder in the 8 burglary cases. That was back in March 6, 1978. And he was going to spend the rest of his life in jail without the possibility of parole. Meanwhile, Lee Farrow, because he pled guilty in order to testify against Clarence Ray Allen, he only got 5 years. While Clarence Ray Allen was in Folsom Prison, he ended up meeting somebody by the name of Billy Ray Hamilton. He was in there for 4 years for an assault with a deadly weapon during a burglary. And he was paroled September 1st, 1980. During the time that he was there with Clarence Ray Allen, he had agreed to essentially become a hitman for Clarence Ray Allen. And he was given a list of 8 people that could possibly be a witness for Clarence Ray Allen's appeal, the trial that he would have if he had to appeal. And he said, well, if they're all dead, there's no way that they can convict me because this is all quote unquote circumstantial evidence. And at this point, he was only talking about the murder of Mary Sue Kitts. because her body had not been found yet. So he got out on September 1st, as I said. 3 days later, he ended up killing 3 people at France Market. And from those 3 people, it included 2 innocent bystanders, workers of the market, and the manager, which were Byron William. What was his last name?
Schletwitz.
There was also Douglas White and Josephine Rocha. I believe that was her name. Yep, that was her name. So those were the 3 people that were murdered during that day. Kenneth Allen had arranged for the transportation to the market where Billy Hamilton and Connie Barbro, that was his girlfriend. She was also an accomplice. They had both gone over there. He had a shotgun with him and she had a .32 caliber, I believe. She did not do any of the shootings, but from what I've read, it went a little bit like this. So Byron had volunteered to give the couple the money that they wanted, even though they really did not have enough. At that point, Hamilton led Byron to the stock room where he pointed the shotgun right at Byron's forehead and shot him from less than a foot away. After that, he came out and told Douglas, "Okay, big boy, where's the safe?" Because he not only wanted to re-rob them, he was going to kill them if they didn't cooperate. And at this point, Douglas responded by saying, "Honest, there is no safe." I mean, they had already been robbed once. They're no longer going to keep the safe in there if they've already been robbed once by the same people. So he ended up shooting him in the neck and in the chest at point blank range. So as he had explained to me, like right there. And at this point, Josephine had started her cry and she was trying to hide herself from him, which he ended up getting really annoyed with her and shot her 3 times, right in the chest and in the neck. And from there, they ended up trying to flee. But a neighbor from the neighboring store by the name of Jack Abbott ended up hearing the commotion and came out with a shotgun. They exchanged fire and Hamilton landed a shot. I think it was near his leg. And Jack Abbott also landed a shot on his foot. So Jack shot Hamilton on the foot and he got away, but Connie did not get away. Connie was right there and that bitch got in trouble, like in trouble. Anyways, there was one more victim, but he did not die. His name was Jose Rios and he avoided death by lifting his arm up to his face like this. So the bullet went into his wrist. And it saved his life. And yeah, those were the murders of the France Market. Now, there's still more stuff to come. I wanted to read a couple of victim impact statements for basically the first 4 victims that Clarence Lee Ray had. The first one, Clarence Ray Allen. I got him confused with Lee Furrow. There's so many of these people, you guys. It is insane. So here's the one for Miss Josephine. So the person that spoke for Josephine was her sister. She said, I, Teresa R. Danielle, declare under penalty of the jury as follows. I am one of Josephine Rocha's four surviving sisters and two surviving brothers. Josephine was murdered at France Market on September 5th, 1980, along with Byron Schletwitz and Douglas White. Josephine, or Fina, was 17 at the time of her death. She was beginning her senior year at Clovis High School. Josephine was a fun-loving girl with a great sense of humor. She had many friends and enjoyed each other's company, borrowing from each other and shopping together. One of Josephine's loves was gardening in with her father. She was a very talented artist, and her family had won, and she had once won first place in a school art contest. She wanted to be a teacher, and like, she was just so good with children, dude. So good with children. Now, there is more, and I will be putting everything that I found in the description below, but I also did want to read a little bit of something for Mr. Douglas. The person that spoke for him was his mom, I believe. Yes, I am I am the mother of Douglas Scott White, one of the victims of the France Market murders on September 4th, 1980. It says that he was murdered in the back room. He was 18 years old and he was attending Ridley Community College. He had graduated from Clovis High School and was a member of the senior choir. He was working so that his parents could retire and essentially fulfill their dreams, because he was being able to fulfill his dreams. And he was brutally murdered as collateral damage, essentially. And then they also spoke about Byron. The person that spoke for Byron was his father. And he said, my family has been victimized by Clarence Ray Allen since 1974 when he burglarized our family's business. Up until just before that burglary, I had never observed any close friendship between Byron and Clarence's son, Roger. However, just before the burglary, I noticed that Roger was visiting the market and talking to Byron just before closing time. Clarence's wife, Darlene, repeatedly pressured Byron to attend Roger's birthday party at Clarence's house after the burglary. I did not see Roger visit the store again. 3 years later, both Byron and I testified at the trial for Clarence for the murder of Mary Sue Kitts. After Clarence was convicted of murdering Mary Sue Kitts because she told Byron about the burglary, Darlene would occasionally come to the store. However, she would always send in Clarence Allen's niece, Misty, to make purchases. So obviously, because of the burglary, they did not have good blood. And it is said that Byron was very close to his family, so his loss was greatly felt. He was the oldest, and he was essentially going to take over the market for his mom and his dad. And he was murdered because he could essentially put Clarence Ray behind bars for the rest of his life. And so that was some of the impact statements that they had for these poor individuals that were murdered. Now, Hamilton did get away. He got away from the scene of the murder, but he was arrested a week later while he was robbing a liquor store, and he was sent to jail on October 16th, 1981. That's actually when he was sentenced to death. So Hamilton was sentenced to death October 16th, 1981, but he died of natural causes in 2007.
So 1981.
That's after his trial.
He was sentenced to death
mm-hmm.
in 1981.
And he died of natural causes.
you know, I've always had a problem with how long people sit on death row. That's one of my main things. I've always had a problem with how long these, how long people sit on death row. I get the reason why, but the people that are convicted and there's substantial evidence that shows that they are the ones that did this crime. Then what takes so long for them to be, you know, put to death? What is the process?
Exactly. You know, actually, I had heard something about that too in another podcast that I was listening to. I will also put them in the link below because they're pretty dope. I don't remember their names. I'm so sorry. But they were essentially saying, it is funny to us how you guys can get a person through a trial so fast, but after they get the death penalty, it takes you years. Like, it should be mandatory 72 hours is what they said. I'm not sure how I feel about it, because you know how I feel about the death penalty. I am pro.
See, I'm in certain situations, I'm pro the death penalty, but if there's any evidence that says that this person may not have done it, then, you know, take as much time as you hold off on it.
Yeah.
Pump the brakes on him or her, because they need that time to go through the motions of getting their appeals and all the evidence to come forward to show that they did not do this crime.
Yeah.
Because then they could just sit in jail for the rest of their life, or they could get out. And they could be exonerated of all crimes.
If they're innocent, yes.
If they're innocent.
With Hamilton, we know that he was not innocent. So it irks me that it shouldn't. I feel like a bad person, but it shouldn't irk me, and it does, that he did not even. He got to die of natural causes.
It irks me too.
Because he brutally murdered three people and attempted to kill two more. Because remember, it was Byron, Douglas, Josephine, attempted murder of Jose, which was the guy that got hit in the wrist, and Jack Abbott, who he tried to kill.
See, that one, I don't think that one should have been counted on. That one was on Hamilton. Sorry. I thought that one was on Allen.
Oh, on special, it was like a special circumstance. Allen did end up getting convicted of three murder charges and got the death penalty because he
orchestrated it.
Yes, because he orchestrated it. Now, I did want to talk about one more thing before we get to Clarence. Because there was a case in, actually, let's go back real quick. I did also want to mention that on February 26, 1982, Connie Barbo, the one that was the accomplice of Hamilton, she also got sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. And she is currently still sitting in the California Institution for Women for her role in the triple murder of Josephine, Byron, and Douglas. Kenneth.
What is that prison? Starts with a C, I think. I can't remember the name of it.
No?
No, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Well, she's still in prison. Kenneth Allen also got sentenced to life. It was originally life without the parole, but because him and his brother pled against, well, no, not, they testified against Clarence Ray Allen, his sentencing was reduced to life with the possibility of parole.
Is he out now?
That I know of, no. That I know of, no, not yet. Now, one person that was out, because he only served 5 years, was Lee Furrow. And later, Allen confessed to the burglary and the murders, the orchestration of the burglary and murders of another family that happened in 1983. So on June 5th, 1983, Lee Furrow went to a house in Chino Hills and brutally murdered 4 people and attempted to murder 1 more little boy. And this is how he did it. So he entered into the house and he essentially bludgeoned everyone to death with a hatchet, a hammer, and an ice pick. It was 2 41-year-olds, the mom and the dad, Douglas and Peggy Reyes, and the daughter, Jessica. She was only 14. They also murdered an 11-year-old, Christopher, who was the neighbor. And they slit the throat of an 8-year-old who survived. The only reason that we know that it was Lee, after an innocent man was convicted of the murder, is because Clarence Ray Allen later came out to say, "These people screwed me over on a horse that I bought from them, and so I sent Lee to kill them." But before all of that happened, this man named Kevin Cooper, who had already been in jail for a quite extensive list, let me tell you, things that included such as burglary, rape and kidnapping, more burglary, and identity theft. That's what he was all in there for. But because he had escaped 2 days prior to the murders, and he was found less than 100 yards from the house where the family was murdered, they automatically assumed that it was him. Now, personally, I believe that this was racial discrimination because Kevin was black. He was a black man. Now, that does not, like
what
I said...
What time period was this in?
This was August 1982. No. June 1983.
Okay.
This is when this happened. Now, they did spot him walking around, so they tried to bring him back in, but like I told you, he managed to avoid the police and they found him. But there was absolutely no evidence that he was the killer. No evidence whatsoever. Yet somehow he still remains on death row till today. And Lee Furrow is free. He got out and he's free. Yeah.
Well, boys, let's go hunting.
What is that from?
I don't know.
I feel like that's from Django.
No. The Well Boys. Is from TikTok. It's Well Boys. I think I sent her a little too hard.
Oh. Now, I do have...
Someone said, yeah. It's definitely racial discrimination.
I thought the same thing. And the worst part is that Lee's girlfriend came to the cops with a piece... Well, not a piece. With... Well, yeah. With a piece, an article of clothing, which was a pair of overalls covered in blood that Lee had come home with the night of the murder and asked her to dispose of. Yeah. Do you want to know how bad it was? Because I have the reports here with me. So these are all of the different fractures and stab wounds that Christopher, the neighbor, had gone through. If you want to look at it. Yeah, he had not all of the wounds. Here they are. So Christopher had died with 26 stab wounds and numerous skull fractures. He also had a severed finger. Jessica was stabbed 46 times with a hatchet, a knife, and an ice pick. Joshua survived, but he had a hatchet wound to the head, multiple knife stabs in the back, and his throat had been slashed. The dad, he had been stabbed 37 times, and his finger was also severed. And I believe the mom was stabbed 16 times, wasn't it? 17 times, yeah. 4 knife wounds. This is the coroner report that I have for Jessica. It shows you exactly where she was stabbed. And guys, I will be posting all of these pictures on the TikTok account. Welcome to the interweb, so that you guys can see them. But yeah. So all of that happened to these poor innocent souls. And all because of a horse. One horse. So, I do have happy ending. Clarence Ray Allen was sentenced to death. He sat in death row for about 14 years. He died of lethal injection in 2006, a day after his birthday. So January 17th, 2006, he died. His last words was a hymn, because he had found out while he was in jail that he was indigenous. And so he wanted to sing something for his indigenous people. Every person that was considered a victim because of his murderous spree was there. So the parents, the sisters, the brothers, the uncles, everybody was there. He winked at one of the victim's family members as he was dying from a lethal injection. He tried to get his death penalty appealed because of quote-unquote racial discrimination, because he was Cherokee. Is that how you pronounce it?
Cherokee.
Cherokee. Thank you. And because he was diabetic, he was deaf, he was partially blind, and he was in a wheelchair. Yet somehow, this bitch was able to pick himself up to sit on the chair, or like in the little bed, without any help. How is it that a person who spent almost the rest of his life in a wheelchair just magically able to sit up on his own? So obviously everybody in there called on him and called it bullshit, because there's no way that he could have done that on his own. And yeah, that was kind of that's pretty much the end. He ended up dying in 2006, a day after his birthday. I do have his final words and his final meal if you want to listen to it.
I'm down.
You're down to listen to it? Okay.
What were his final words?
His final words were, "Hoka hey, it's a good day to die. Thank you very much. I love you all. Goodbye." His final meal was buffalo steak, Kentucky Fried Chicken, sugar-free pecan pie, sugar-free black walnut ice cream, and a glass of whole milk. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's the story of Clarence Ray Allen and his mafia lifestyle. On a good note, though, Kenneth Cooper, in 2018, the governor of California approved the new DNA testing to see if they can prove his innocence. So his death row conviction sentencing, the last that I heard, had been delayed.
Good. Justice is working for the betterment of our people.
Yes, sir, it is. And that's the story of Clarence Ray Allen, Lee Furrow, Billy Ray Hamilton, and the innocent Kevin Cooper. That was also the story of Mary Sue Kitts, Byron, Douglas, Josephine, and the Reyes family, along with Christopher. Any last words, baby?
None.
None? You just speechless?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Baby, do you want to tell them where they can follow you?
You guys can go ahead and follow me on TikTok, KingMaze8296. And yeah.
You want to plug in your other TikTok for the podcast?
Oh, Savage Talk.
8296.
8296.
And you can follow me at Welcome to the Interweb on TikTok. And Welcome to the Interweb on Spotify, so that you guys can listen to this beautiful podcast that we have going on. I am every day learning. I'm getting more and more confident with the way that I present things. And I hope that you guys had fun. Love you guys. Okay, bye. Oh, wait. No, not bye yet. Because we still have to do the Welcome to the Dark Web. Remember?
Which one?
We were going to talk about Arden Pipion today.
Okay.
Yeah. So Arden is a 3-year-old little girl that went missing in Browning, Montana. Not too long ago. It was a little bit under 3 months ago. She was with her grandmother originally, but ended up in the care of her uncle and her uncle's girlfriend. They ended up going to a shooting range right off of Highway 85, I believe, and she went missing. Her uncle and her uncle's girlfriend did not notice that she had gone missing until they saw footprints leading to the river that was about 50 yards away from where they were at. When they got to the river, to the river's edge, the only thing that they saw was a little brown boot. So the only options that they had was Arden either drowned or she was abducted. The police were not called until 6 hours after Arden had originally gone missing. So there's still no investigations. Like, there's no current update on the investigation. They only searched for her for about 10 days, 60-mile radius is the only thing that they really did for her. They told the parents, we'll hire a private investigator. And there has been no new updates whatsoever. So if you guys have absolutely any idea where Arden could be at, she's an indigenous female, 3 years old. She was last seen wearing a jacket, gray jacket. It says Glacier on it, and some blue jeans with some brown boots. Like I said, they found one boot, but they don't know where she could be. So if you guys have any information on her, please call the Blackfeet Tribal Police Department at 438-336-4000. Yes, I believe that's what it is. And if that's not what it is, then I will update it on the next episode. You guys have a good night. Please, if you guys have absolutely any information, just go ahead and call. You can always find her on, you can find her missing poster at the, what was it called? The National Database for Missing Children or something like that. Regardless of it, I will put her link in the description box below. You guys have a good night, okay? Love you guys. Thank you for joining the live. The live. Oh, and if you guys want to join the live later on, we always do lives for this podcast at the TikTok Jessica Jeanette Heal. That's GIL at the end. So yeah, just come and join us. Bye.